The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Welcome in to this week's episode of Nosebleeds, your WFUV Sports home for everything Yankees, everything Mets, and everything else from around the world of baseball. I am Tucker Austin, joined today by Peter Brito, an absolute legend in the circle in the WFUV Sports softball game back in the spring semester. Peter, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I wouldn't say I was a legend. Somebody definitely helped me out with that home run, bringing it back in, but... It is what it is. You know, we give up the long ball, we get the strikeout. Some, it is what it is.
Hey, we wound up with a win. So either way, it works out. But we'll touch on our metro area baseball teams, the Yankees and Mets, of course, as always. Before talking a little bit about some rumblings about blowouts in Major League Baseball. It's been all over MLB Network for the last couple of days. We'll get into that later, but we're also going to touch on the Athletes United Softball League towards the end, which I think is pretty cool. But to start off with the New York Yankees, the Yankees are absolutely rolling now after they dropped 2 of 3 at home against the Boston Red Sox in a series where a lot of people expected the Yankees to win the series, if not sweep the Red Sox, because they came in really, really slumping. But the Red Sox burned the Yankees. Rafi Devers burned the Yankees, I should say. Rafi Devers is an absolute animal when he hits at Yankee Stadium. The Yankees dropped 2 games to the Red Sox, and then they went to Kansas City in the middle of this week and took care of business. They were mad about that Red Sox series. They swept the Kansas City Royals. The last game was 1-0. It ended crazy last night. Pablo Reyes, first of all, there was a rain delay in the sixth, and it was nothing through to the eighth, and then Pablo Reyes scampers home on a crazy play. It was like a line drive to the first baseman off Goldschmidt's bat, goes off his glove into right field. They try to get him at first, they don't get him, ball gets away again.
Man,
Reyes is falling over trying to get to home plate. He finally gets there, ball gets away from the catcher again. You could probably point out like at least 2 errors on the Royals in that situation. But now, big series this weekend. The Yankees are in Boston for 3 against the Red Sox, trying to take a little bit of revenge. But just to touch on this Royals series, I guess we'll highlight Aaron Judge in particular, because how can you not? He's on an absolute tear right now. Picked up, I think it was 4 home runs during that Royals series, like that. And I mean, 400, what was it, 467? He put a ball on top of the Royals Hall of Fame.
Bro, yeah.
Absolute insanity.
Yeah. I think this offense is definitely being carried by Judge right now. Like, I was looking at the stats and I saw this man had 25 home runs. I said, Jesus Lord. Like, that's something you probably like dream about having. Maybe in your career or like your first couple of years, and he's just, yeah, I do it in a season, like nothing. But I think coming off that series against the Red Sox and going into Kansas, you know, I even remember I was watching final game of Women's College World Series, and I was keeping up with Yankees and Red Sox scores, and I said, oh, Yankees scrolling through first game. It was like 8-0. But I don't know. Red Sox like got some momentum in that first game, and you could definitely tell that it carried into game 2 and game 3, because they were absolutely just scoring runs, like unfathomable runs. Like I think we probably have to go back to the Dodgers games with how many runs they were scoring. But I really think that, you know, you need some losses in order to learn Because I feel like if you have a team that goes completely undefeated, they're not gonna really know what their weaknesses are and what like to really focus on to better on. So I feel like having that loss, that series loss against the Red Sox, especially since the American League East, they're not really having the best kind of seasons right now. So I think the Red Sox taking that series was kind of like wow, but it's also a learning point and a good stepping point to when they're actually going into Boston. And I'm excited to see the series.
Yeah, it, definitely nice to see the bounce back in Kansas City against a Royals team that is having a better year than the Red Sox are. But the
Right.
Yankees absolutely handled business, and it was on the road. They didn't even play all their starters to start the game in game three against the Royals.
Right.
Aaron Judge made like a spot pinch hit appearance late, but the Yankees didn't even get anything out of him. And
Yeah.
then Goldschmidt was the hero after that. But you had guys like Judge didn't start, Jazz didn't start. I think a few others who are usually in the starting lineup just got a they got a first like they're pretty much their first day off of the year in that third game against the Royals. Also going into that Red Sox series at Yankee Stadium, the Yankees had won 8 of 9 or 8 of their last 9 series. So I
Right.
like that you mentioned that it's a good thing for a team to run into some adversity like that, and especially at Yankee Stadium. I think. Like if the Yankees, like the Dodgers series, kind of they got away from them really early, and they salvaged the last game, but then they win a series against the Guardians at Yankee Stadium, and they kind of start like it felt like they were kind of cruising a little bit. Then the Red Sox punched them in the mouth, and that kind of woke the team back up again. But still, yeah, it's going to be a big series coming in to Boston this weekend. The probables. For tonight are Ryan Yarbrough for the Yankees and Garrett Crochet for the Red Sox. So the Yankees are going to try and get as much length as they can out of Yarbrough. Going into this game tonight, the Red Sox actually, according to ESPN, have a 63.4% chance to win this game tonight in Boston. I guess what do you make of the matchup odds there? And I mean, can the Yankees get like 3 or 4 out of Yarbrough?
I would say going back to the series in the Bronx, what the Red Sox did really well was they utilized their pitchers well and their bullpens well. So I think if they're able to utilize their starting pitchers at least decent amount of innings, maybe like 5 innings, 6 innings, and then try to bring their bullpen in to try to wrap it up the game, I think that would be ideal and great for the Red Sox. But you need to carry that momentum from that series in the Bronx, and you need to start scoring some runs because, I mean, you're not gonna win against the Yankees if you don't score some runs, especially if you have a guy on the damn team that has 25 home runs. Like, there needs to be some more offense. But I feel like if they utilize that pitching staff in the way that they did in the Bronx, I think it should be a pretty good matchup because they've already seen each other, so they know the tendencies between each other. So I think if the Red Sox do what they did in that series, in this series, I think it should be a more anticipated matchup, because it is like Boston Red Sox, like that's matchups like everybody wants to see. But how poorly the Red Sox are doing right now, I think, like kind of what I was saying previously, that series was a bounce back for them, and I feel like it can give them more confidence and boost. Like, yeah, we can play against the Yankees, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Totally agree. I thought the going into the Red Sox series at Yankee Stadium, there was not that much buzz. We were on one-on-one. We were fighting over whether or not the Yankees Red Sox rivalry still even mattered since they
Yeah.
hadn't played in a meaningful game against each other since
Yeah, I'd
the
agree.
playoffs in like 2021, I think. And that's been 4 years. So the quite a while since the Yankees Red Sox rivalry has really had more stakes on it than just bragging rights. But after that first series, the Red Sox put up a lot more of a fight than I think the Yankees were expecting, and I think than the Yankee fans were expecting as well.
Yeah, and
So
I think it caught them a little off guard too, 'cause Like I was saying, the American League East, they're not really doing so well right now, especially the Red Sox. So kind of to come into that series, they were probably like, yeah, like kind of what you said in the beginning. Yeah, they were probably like, they're probably known to, the Yankees were probably going to be like, yeah, we're going to sweep these guys, pack up their bags and leave. But they were like, no, we mean business. And I think that was the turning point for the Red Sox. And now coming into this series, I feel like it's going to be a whole different ball game and a better matchup because of
Yeah,
that reason.
much more high profile coming to Boston. I mean, the Yankees Red Sox got they always get national TV coverage when they play, but this time I feel like there's going to be a couple more eyeballs on it just because the
I'd
Red
agree.
Sox took the first series. And it's going to be fun to see some of the Yankees, some of the newer Yankees like Goldschmidt, Bellinger, with their first times in Fenway Park, see what they can do on the Boston side
I
of the
agree.
rivalry. But game one of the second series of the rivalry between the Yankees and Red Sox is tonight, as of the recording of this podcast, 7:10 on June 13th, Friday the 13th. Wow, didn't even notice until just now. But moving over to Queens and to apparently maybe the best team in baseball right now, the New York Mets. I believe they have the best record in the league.
I'd agree. I
Yeah, they're
think
tied. Actually,
I've
they have the same number of wins as the Tigers, but they have one
Tigers,
less
yeah.
loss.
Right.
So technically they are the best team in baseball by record, and it's for good reason. Pete Alonso has been hot from the jump. Francisco Lindor has been playing great, and he broke his toe last week and he's still playing well. They're
I
pinch
know.
hitting him and he's still like he hit a
He's
two-run
stealing.
double
He's
with a
stealing
broken
base.
toe.
Yeah, he's stealing bases with a broken toe. Like, man, I'd be on the bench.
But then also the third man in their three-headed monster in that offense is Juan Soto this year. He's turned it around in the last week and a half. His average is going like in the last 10 games for him is through the roof. The home runs are starting to become more frequent. Whereas like start of the season, I mean, there was a bunch of nonsense. Like he's not even shuffling. He doesn't want to be here. Like Yankee fans trying to act like the Mets don't want like or that
Right.
he doesn't want to be with the Mets, but now he's shuffling again. Now he's hitting home runs. The other night, him, Lindor, and Alonso all went deep in the same game for the first time. I think it was against the Dodgers at Citi Field. But now the Mets find themselves coming off of a sweep against the Nationals and a sweep against the Rockies. That is a six-game winning streak that the Mets are riding into the weekend for a three-game homestand with the Tampa Bay Rays. Now, this could be interesting because I know, like the AL East, like you said before, they haven't had the best start outside of the Yankees to a season. But we look to the last 10 for all of the teams in the AL East, and they're actually all positive. They all have at least a 6-4 record in their last 10 games, and the Tampa Bay Rays are sort of just they're biting at the heels of the Toronto Blue Jays. They were tied about a week ago. Now the Rays trail the Blue Jays by 2 games in the AL East, but the Rays are definitely still one of those sneaky teams, as they usually are. They don't have a high payroll. They don't have a lot of names that jump out at you, like guys that get on, like make headlines on ESPN. That's not how the Rays are. That's just not the type of organization they are, but they'll still make noise when you have to play against them. So not an easy series in the slightest, but I think the Mets are very well prepared. They had David Peterson go for a complete game shutout against the Washington Nationals during that Nats series. I mean, this Mets team is rolling. They look like the best team in baseball right now.
Yeah, I'd agree, and kind of to piggyback off that, I think scouting is definitely going to be crucial for this matchup because kind of like what you said, the Rays, they can be very unexpected. You know, they have that fight sometimes they do, but I feel like the performance that the Mets are showing right now. Me personally, I'm a Mets fan, so I'm not gonna try to show my biases, but I think they got this in the bag right now. You know, their pitchers are doing absolutely incredible. David Peterson, Clay Holmes, Tyler McGills, Griffin Canning. Not to mention, they even have one of their starting pitchers that are out of the rotation right now, Kode Senga, with a hamstring in, injury. So I think if they if they limit the amount of runs like how they have been doing throughout the season, and if the offense still continues to click like Pete Alonso, Lindor, and Soto, I think they should be rolling, my personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the stats speak for themselves with this team. Pete Alonso batting 298 on the year. That hasn't moved in a couple of days. So he's been really, really consistent. You look over Francisco Lindor's batting around 280. Juan Soto's average is on its way back up after a slow start. It's sitting at 250 right now, but the way he's been playing recently, it's a lot better than that. But in this Nat series too, the Mets got big hits out of Brandon Nimmo. He went yard twice in that complete game shutout. They also had who else just went to Jeff McNeil. Jeff McNeil had a walk-off hit the other night, and he had a hit a three-run jack the other night. So it seems like Jeff McNeil, his bat may have finally turned around. And that's a multi-year project that's been going on with the Mets, just trying to see if Jeff McNeil can get the bat going a little bit, 'cause his glove, there's no doubt about his glove and about what he brings to the Mets in terms of like being a locker room guy. And he's been there for so long.
Right.
But to get the bat out of Jeff McNeil is just so huge. It makes him so much more valuable, of a piece on this team. Brett Beatty's still playing pretty well, for them, which is a really good sign, because for a while it took him a while to get going at the major league level, but now it seems like he's finally sort of settling in. And then just the pitching from the Mets is just it's absolutely ridiculous. Their pitching staff has been so good this year. I mean, Peterson, we mentioned already, went for a complete game. Senga's been really good so far this year. He has a 1.47 ERA.
Nice.
Clay Holmes, who's been turned into a starter, is giving them really, really solid outings. Tyler Megill always has pretty decent starts. Pretty much all the way through the rotation, they can get a solid 5 innings at least whenever they need it.
Yeah, they also had they also have Edwin Diaz with a whole bunch of saves this season as well. So I even think with their starters, if they can at least get them to like maybe seventh, eight inning. Rotate a couple pitchers out, get Diaz in there. Even though sometimes I do think Diaz needs like a whole bunch of runs in order to save a damn game, because sometimes he has like five runs on the scoreboard, and it then like at the end becomes like a one run game. But other than that, I think if they continue to be dialed in, throw effectively like how they've been doing all season, I think they should be fine.
Yeah, Edwin Diaz, 28 innings on the year. He's got a two, he's got 15 saves, which I believe is up there for the league lead, if not the league lead. But a 2.22 ERA is a bit odd for a
Yep.
reliever, especially a closer. So yeah, definitely there's credence to that. Edwin Diaz kind of taking notes from Clay Holmes last season in the second half for the Yankees.
I'd agree.
But the Mets go into a series with the Rays this week, 7:10 p.m. Also, tonight, as of the recording of this podcast, they'll have 3 games with Tampa in Queens, and they'll try to continue their run with the best record right now. They just got to outlast the Tigers. They get a win, the Tigers get a loss, they'll be fully solidified as the having the lead in Major League Baseball. But that about does it for our Yankees and Mets discussion today. Before we get to the AUSL, I just wanted to touch on some of the conversation that's been going on among the baseball heads, we could say, the talking heads on MLB Network and ESPN, who have been mentioning this particular game from Tuesday's earlier in the week, as of this recording. The Dodgers were getting plastered by the Padres. It was 9-0 in the fifth inning, and I think it was game one of the series as well. I believe it was game one. They're down 9-0 against division rival Padres. Padres Dodgers is supposed to be one of the better matchups in Major League Baseball this year, but it's the sixth inning, and out marches Kike Hernandez with his weird like front half
I don't even
helmet.
know what you want to call it.
The attachment on his hat that he wears when they throw a position player out there, and it's always him. But I mean, a position player in the sixth inning, I get that you're down by nine,
Nine,
but
yeah.
it gets to a point, right?
I feel like that witnessing that was almost witnessing like they were accepting their defeat already. 'Cause you know, I've seen some real close. I saw a lot of really good games throughout softball regionals where Texas A&M was playing against Liberty, and they were very high scoring games. And you know, Texas A&M was the number one seed against an unseeded team, and I never saw, you know, a position player maybe going in. It was always constant fight. So I think in terms of that, I think it was just kind of like the Dodgers was kind of just like accepting their defeat already. But I think it kind of really just looks bad on them because it's like, yeah, we give up already. Like, what can we do? But I feel like it's never over until you get the final out. My
Yeah,
personal.
I mean, as Yogi Berra famously said, it ain't over till it's over. So I think this was a weird decision from Dave Roberts. I like one of the main arguments that I heard, and I actually kind of agreed with, is like imagine all of the or imagine any of the casual baseball fans who decided to tune in to Dodgers Padres because it's a the hot matchup in the league this year. And you
Right.
tune in the sixth inning, and it's like okay, or it's like the middle of the game, and something might be going on. Even if you saw a 9-0 scoreboard, I think you'd still be like, there might be some fireworks in store here.
I
But
mean,
then Kike Hernandez is throwing 50 miles an hour.
yeah, look at game one of Yankees and Red Sox. Red Sox were down like 8 runs, 7 runs, and they still didn't win that game, but they still showed fight and came back at least. I think final score was like 9-6, but they still showed fight and they still at least brought the momentum and brought that momentum to game two and game three. So I think that's probably what the Dodgers should have done. Maybe you could have the argument like, yeah, we want to save our pitcher's arms for tomorrow, have a better game. Sure, like I can maybe see that argument, but I don't know. You kind of have. I already said it. You kind of have to fight till you get the last out, and that's it.
Yeah, 100%. I think we both are on the side of people who, I mean, some people are like trying to condemn Dave Roberts for this, and it's like, come on, Dave Roberts is like, he's a really good, like he's a good manager.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And he made a decision in this game to go to a position player, on the early side of the game, in terms of when you would bother bringing in a position player to try and save the bullpen. But again, this Dodgers lineup is so talented that you would imagine
You
they
could
might
have a
have 9 runs
chance.
in the tank in the back
Agreed.
end,
I
but
agree.
more decisions from Dave Roberts. Mookie Betts came out of this game. I think Freddie Freeman also came out of this game like around the time when they were down 9-0, like at the peak of the scoring. And like at that point, that's really throwing in the towel. Like you're pinch hitting guys that you wouldn't necessarily trust to try and make a comeback, and you're pitching Kike Hernandez. That every Dodger fan, I wouldn't be surprised if every Dodger fan that was watching this from home just turned the game off at this point. Because
I'd
why would you
agree.
even keep watching? Dave Roberts essentially just told you, we're losing. Stop watching.
I'd agree,
But
yeah. I'd
either
agree.
way, the decision was made. It's come and gone. And you know, we're left here to talk about it. Like people have been floating ideas for like there to be rules in blowout games where like I don't know. I don't even know how you would begin to enforce some kind of a rule that would make managers throw their pitchers in blowout games. It just
Yeah.
it's a lot of talk and a
It is.
lot of reaction to something that a lot of people see as negative, but you know, at the end of the day, it's a 162 game season. He tried to save his bullpen one
As
out of the
much as you can.
162 games. The Dodgers are not going to be hurt. Although, I mean, I should say this now, but I might eat this when it comes to the end of the season. How about let's say this: the Dodgers better not lose the West by one game.
I'd agree with that. I'd so agree with that. I'd so agree with that. For sure.
So, talked plenty. We've talked enough about all that nonsense with Kike Hernandez pitching. The helmet is a whole nother thing, but
At this
really
point,
quickly.
he should wear a softball mask out there. I think he got a lot of money for that.
Well, he could wear one if he went to go play in the AUSL, which is what we're going to touch on right now, right before we wrap up. The Athletes United Softball League, or Athletes Unlimited, excuse me. I keep saying United. I always think it's United. I feel like United would have been like, I don't know, it would have been a little bit better. But Athletes Unlimited Softball League is in action now after the Major League Baseball made a strategic investment into the league to sort of create the first professional softball league for all of these really talented college or maybe a little bit older softball players who just never got to keep playing after their college career was over. Like you've been talking about it this whole time. The College Softball World Series is really, really competitive, and there's a lot of talented players in there. And they just kind of had nowhere to go after they graduated, and their careers were just kind of over at that point. But now, with this investment, Major League Baseball has created a place where the most talented softball players, at least in America, if not the world, can come play softball at a professional level in the AUSL. I think this is really cool, and this is long overdue, to be honest, because with the
I
way the
agree.
WNBA has been built up by the NBA since its inception, really set the standard for how men's professional leagues can work with their like female counterparts of their sport to try and build that up. You see the NFL working with flag football a lot at the high school level to try and get more girls involved, and now Major League Baseball take a step with AUSL. And I like personally I think it's really cool, but just want to get your thoughts on it real quick, Peter.
I mean, I'd agree with everything you said. I think this was definitely the right step to a the right step into a right direction for especially for softball. Like, softball is a very niche sport. Not a lot of people know about it. Not a lot of people watch it, even though it's very, ideally very similar to baseball. You know, obviously there's obviously some rule changes,
I
smaller
mean, there's
field.
like a there's a couple different rules, and yeah, the
Yeah.
dimensions are different. There's a couple like the terminology changes a little bit for
Correct.
certain things, but the
Correct.
general idea of
The
both
gen
games is pretty much the same.
Correct. You hit the ball, you want to get the runner, you want to get the
Score
runner on.
runs.
Exactly. So I think MLB and this MLB investment is not only good for softball. I feel like it's also just it's incredible for the growth of the game, but also the growth of women's sports in general. Like you were kind of saying, some of these collegiate athletes, you know, they graduate college and they want to keep playing professionally, and they want to continue playing the game that they love, because you know, some maybe have won national championships, some maybe have been studs for their institution, so they want to continue that. But it wasn't really a thing for professional softball, unless if you were maybe playing for international.
I was gonna say, if you went overseas, that was your only option.
That was your only option, or maybe you're playing for Team USA. But even still, like, softball was discontinued in the Olympics for a hot minute. I believe
I think it's
they did.
back in in
It
summer
is
26.
back. They discontinued it. I believe it was in Beijing in 2008, and it didn't come back in London, and it didn't come back in Rio, and then it came back in Tokyo. And that was kind of the starting point where, like, oh, it's back. But I think it really just it amazes me that it finally happened, because you know, they deserve to have a place to play professional as well. And not only to mention that, you know, a whole bunch of legends are running it too, like Jenny Finch, Kat Osterman, Natasha Watley, Jessica Mendoza. They're the main reason why this is starting up, and I'm so glad that it has finally it's finally a thing. Because, like I was saying, me personally, I love watching softball. I watch regionals, I watch super regionals all the time, I watch the World Series all the time. Shout out to the amazing College World Series that we had this year. Absolutely insane. And I'm so glad Oklahoma was not a championship and somebody else was. That's besides the point. But I think this is amazing for the sport and just for women's sports in general, period.
Yeah. And like, just to mention one other sport that's been moving this direction recently, the PWHL, alongside the NHL. So the MLB is kind of like the last, I mean, there's no professional level football for girls, but I mean, we talked about the flag football and the high school level. Things are developing on the football side, and the NFL has been involved with just trying to grow that game. And then the NHL brings in the PWHL. NBA has been working on the WNBA for a long time. Major League Baseball is seemingly the last of the big four sports to the table when it comes to supporting their female counterparts. But I mean, I feel I kind of expect that from baseball. Baseball's an old sport. It changes very slow. And
I'd agree.
play like in the last couple of years, it's been more changed than there was in maybe 30, 40 years before that when it comes to just how the game is played. But you know, we're in an era of change and we're in an era of development. And now see the development of professional softball in the United States. Huge, huge moves. Love to see it. And I mean, this is only going to grow. Major League Baseball has a lot of money. There's a
I
lot of
agree.
money in baseball and a lot of money that can be diverted towards this softball league.
I
But
agree.
that just about wraps it up for our show today. Great show. We covered a lot of bases. Went a bit longer than I was expecting to. I thought it would be a slow episode, but you know, it was a great conversation nonetheless. Thanks so much, Peter, for joining me today. Peter Brito, of course. I have been Tucker Austin, and Nosebleeds is a production of WFUV Sports. We'll see you guys next time.
Look at